Hi, my name is Mansi, and I am obsessed with unearthing every little secret about parenting, babies, business, and wellness that will help you navigate through all the questions you always wanted to ask, but didn't know who to. I'm a simple woman from the Mexican city who quit her high-paying marketing job to start India's most trusted discovery platform for parents after a six-month backpacking trip with her two-year-old daughter with just rupees 10,000. I now run a seven-figure online business with kidstoppress.com and connect with over 10 million parents a month. I share our favorites every single day on the website and on our social media so you can have the best moments with your children and leave the discovering to us. Think of this as your play date with a fellow mom over wine or coffee who loves her kids but also needs her happy ass without them. Shy away from the real talk? No ways. Whether it's money, business, failure, baby, sex, or frustrations of not keeping it all together, we've got you covered. So now grab your tea, sit cozy, and stay tuned for another stellar episode of Keep It Real podcast by kidstoppress.com. Hi guys, I am very, very, very excited to be chatting with Dr. Sauradipta Chandra. And actually more than excited, I think I'm very happy that he's having this conversation with us today. And I think what's very important is to calm down a lot of the anxiety that we as parents have. I'm sure that after this conversation, you're going to really appreciate. So some of the issues that we're addressing today, and I'm going to walk you through a few of the questions that we have for Dr. Chandra today. And obviously COVID and the third wave, masking up, are we ready? What are the learnings from some of the other countries that India can really, really implement? And of course, he's the best person to have this conversation with. Dr. Chandra, what would be incredible is if you can introduce yourself to our audience today. It'll just help everybody get perspective.
All right. So I'm a consultant physician in New Delhi. There's a little clinic that we run here called Innovation Medical Center. So I work here as a consultant physician. And apart from that, I specialize in internal medicine and I also specialize in aeromedical emergencies. So quite a bit of traveling involved. Apart from that, I act as the medical advisor to quite a couple of eminent organizations, including the delegation of the European Union in India here, including the UNICEF here, including quite a couple of embassies. So it's a conglomeration of a couple of things that I do out there.
Dr. Chandra, I'm going to dive straight into the impending question. Is that and you've spoken extensively on COVID, and your last video gave all of us immense clarity into what we were really, really expecting and what to watch out for, which has been really, really helpful. I'm sure you've got a lot of messages on that one. But I want to understand, and primarily because we're a parenting website, understand about kids and the second wave and kids and the third wave that we're talking about. So, any key learnings from the second wave and how it impacted children?
Right. So, we've all seen how bad the second wave was. I think almost all of us at a personal level have been affected by the second wave. And almost everyone that I know have lost somebody or have been affected severely because of this situation. Now, if I look at it at the pediatric age group, if you're just talking about the pediatric age group here, what you need to know is that in the second wave, we saw a huge number of patients, right? We saw almost 400,000 cases a day for multiple days. Simultaneously, the proportion of children that were also affected also increased. So there was a proportionate increase in the number of children that were affected in this case. Now, what I would like to emphasize here is that almost 99% of children recovered, all right? 99% of children recovered because the majority of the cases were either mild or moderate. There was that 1% of cases that were severe. Some did get affected with multiple critical conditions like the multi-system inflammatory syndrome, etc. They got infected by that. However, almost 99% healed, all right? Now, what is also crucial to be emphasized at this phase is that it's very crucial that that to understand that there is no specific variant, there is no specific variant of COVID, including the Delta variant, including the Gamma variant, the Delta variant, that have actually caused any specific harm towards children. It's not directed towards children, but it is affecting the overall population a lot more. So as a result of which, proportionately, the number of children are getting impacted as well. But again, I emphasize on the fact it's not as severe as we are making out to be, or if the common layman makes out to be. It's not that severe. 99% of the patients have healed. All right.
Dr. Chanda, that brings me to two very, very important questions. One is, have we reached herd immunity? And the second, you know, there's so much prep that's gone into preparing for third wave and preps for the children's ward and, you know, and for children. Let's take it one at a time. Have we reached herd immunity?
So before we understand, we go into that answer, we need to understand what exactly is herd immunity, right? Now, herd immunity would develop if a certain section, rather a large chunk of the population, develops an immunity, whether direct or indirect, against a certain infection. In this case, we are talking about COVID. Now, had that been the situation, had we all developed immunity after the first wave, we would not have been facing a second wave this massive. Right. So, no, the answer would be no, we have not yet received we have not yet reached herd immunity. The only way to kind of achieve a portion of it would be to vaccinate people as much as possible. Solely because this virus is basically mutating all the time. We have multiple mutants coming up, and that's the reason why we will get infected and reinfected. The only way to reach a certain level of immunity would be to vaccinate as large numbers of population as possible. That would provide us a certain amount of protection. So no, we have not yet received herd immunity. And yes, vaccination may give us a certain amount of immunity there, at least a certain semblance of a herd immunity.
You spoke of vaccination, and there is so much of, there's so much confusion of doctors taking the first step forward, convincing people to first get vaccinated. Now that people have vaccinated themselves, they think they're James Bond. And, you know, it's all over and COVID is behind us. So I must ask you, and you know, it's literally like people say, oh, I've got my two shots now. I'm fine. I'm good. I don't need to, like, maybe mask up, or I can jab and I can do this. How safe or comfortable are we with the second jab done as well?
All right. Well, again, the vaccination does not guarantee protection 100%. Right. It does not guarantee protection. However, it definitely provides a certain amount of protection in bringing down the severity of the disease if, God forbid, one gets the infection after that. But there is no 100% guarantee that you will be protected. That's with all vaccinations, not just with the COVID vaccine. Now, we all need to understand that we're barely in the trial stages of everything. It's barely been a year and a half that the disease has hit us. And everybody is trying their best to figure out the best way, the best vaccine, to give you 100% protection. So you need to know that if you've taken both your shots, that does not guarantee you protection. More so, it does not guarantee the fact that you can't transmit the infection to someone else. So you may have taken the injections, the vaccination. You may have already had COVID in the past, but that does not mean you are not a carrier of the active infection. You may carry the active infection, particularly in your nose and your throat and your mouth, and you can pass it on unwillingly to quite a couple of other people around you, your loved ones, elderly folks, children around you. So irrespective of the vaccination, please make sure that you have your mask on, you follow your basic social distancing protocol, and you also make sure that you follow every sanitation and sanitization process that we followed so far. So having the vaccination does not mean that you go out without your mask and you just go set yourself free. That doesn't happen.
Also, a very important question here that, you know, people often assume that just because they have the antibodies or they've just recovered, through the second wave, could they be carriers to other people who have not developed antibodies or have not got COVID yet?
Absolutely. They can be carriers. Like I explained, let's say you have antibodies in your system. Somebody is already healed from COVID and they have enough antibodies in their system. They can still harbor the virus in their nose. And this is a research with, I do believe the public health community in England did this, and they found out active viruses in the nose and the throat of people who have recovered from COVID, and they can pass it on to other people. Also, let's say if a person who has recovered from COVID, let's say by hypothesis, is not capable of transmitting the virus. If that would have been the case, why are so many people getting reinfected by COVID, irrespective of having antibodies? One needs to understand that the virus is very smart. It will mutate. It will mutate further. And it will find ways to enter our bodies. So it is very crucial that even if you have antibodies, you're safe, please mask up and just follow the basic COVID protocol. And that would make a lot of things easier.
Right. Also, coming to my next question, which is, you know, you work with so many countries, you know, across the globe. What has been the learning for the prep for the third wave now that the EU's open, London is slowly opening up, the US is largely opened up? What are some of the learnings as India prepares to open up again?
I'll focus on two points here. The first point being vaccination. It's very, very crucial to get as many people vaccinated and with the right and the correct vaccine. I would suggest opening up our borders to mRNA vaccines particularly. You know, particularly Pfizer and Moderna, they have been showing incredible efficacy against the virus, especially against the Delta variant, which is more prevalent in India, and it's spreading across the world at this stage. Definitely make sure that we vaccinate as many as possible. That's number one. That's what the EU, that's what Europe, that's what America, every developed country is doing rather. For us, another thing that we need to learn from them is we really, really need to boost up our healthcare infrastructure. We definitely need to invest more. For a country with a population as large as ours, we have about 11,000 patients for one doctor. And that's exactly why we suffered in the last 2 months the way we did. The healthcare infrastructure absolutely collapsed. It's very crucial that we have more hospitals, more ICUs, more oxygen, more life-saving medication, and that we are not running around for something as simple as amphotericin B when somebody has a black fungus situation, you know? So it's very, very crucial. So two things, vaccination and healthcare infrastructure, we need to amp it up. That's what these countries have been teaching us every day.
Right. Also, the government just released about 4 days ago, the COVID protocol for children and the treatment protocol for children. How effective, if I may say, if that's the right word, is it, and how does it fare against what other countries are following?
The gist of the guidelines is that patients have been categorized, kids basically, have been categorized into mild, moderate, and severe categories, and the treatment protocols have been explained accordingly. All right. Now, there are certain things which I find a little controversial, particularly when it comes to the mild form of treatment. When you do have mild symptoms, particularly in children, they usually consist of fever, they consist of cough, body ache, and they basically resemble flu, like the common flu. Now, there are two points which are mentioned in the guidelines, and probably these two are the ones which I'm a little, I wouldn't say against. I'll always say have a word with your pediatrician and then go for this. The first point says that when there is fever, you may give your child paracetamol, right? Now, you also need to know that paracetamol may not be suitable to every child. If you have jaundice, if you have a hepatic problem, if you have an issue with the liver, you need to make sure to avoid paracetamol completely, because paracetamol will cause further worsening of the liver condition. You may need to have a word with your pediatrician first and then give paracetamol. All right. So it's always before giving any medication, have a word with your pediatrician, because a lot depends on your kid's medical history. The second point mentions that for mild treatment at home, you do not need antibiotics. All right. Now, again, that's a controversial point which I would like to bring up. Now, everybody does not need antibiotic. Every kid does not need an antibiotic. However, there are COVID patients, particularly even with mild symptoms. It's a virus, right? The COVID virus is a virus. It infects your system and it opens up the lungs particularly and your entire system for secondary bacterial infections which may enter your system, for which you may need antibiotics, particularly if you have a respiratory tract infection. So instead of, you know, following the exact guidelines, you can keep the guidelines in mind. Always have a word with your pediatrician, because there are chances that you may have to start certain antibiotics like an azithromycin or something to take care of the infection at home. It's simple, but it's best to have a word with your pediatrician in terms of this.
And how is this vis-a-vis the other countries? Is this protocol pretty much standardized across the globe?
It's slightly different in the sense that, again, in fact, what I mentioned is something what I would follow, which are the guidelines of the EU or of the UK. Very specific medications are never mentioned. You always have to have a word with your pediatrician, and based on that, take your kid to the hospital or have a word with your nearest GP, and that's how you progress. But overall, the categories of mild, moderate, and severe symptoms, they are correct. They are at par with what the EU and what the other countries follow. America also follows, for that matter.
Dr. Chandra, also a question here would be that, you know, a lot of the state governments are making it, or recommending rather, that children be given flu shots. Again, your take on that, because we've had multiple doctors have multiple opinions on it. So parents are really in a state of flux. You know, there's resistance, there is just succumbing to the pressure sometimes, or third pressure. Listen, what's the harm? Let me just do it.
So a flu vaccine is absolutely fine to be taken after 6 months of age. If your child is above 6 months of age, you may take the shot. Now, the shot has to be in the pediatric age group, if I'm not mistaken. My pediatrician friends will be able to guide me better in this. But as far as I remember, it was one shot at 6 months and one shot at 8 years. These are the two shots that one needs to take. And after that, later on in life, in your adult life, it becomes a yearly shot. Now, again, there is no 100% guarantee that the vaccination will protect you against all types of flus. However, yes, the vaccine definitely protects you against certain complications which are developed due to COVID, like lung infections, flu signs and symptoms. The vaccination does protect you. In my opinion, take the flu shot. And of course, after a word with your pediatrician, definitely go for the flu shot. Keep all your vaccinations updated, actually. You know, keep all your vaccinations up to date. And also make sure that you take your height and the weight of your child and note it down every other day. The reason being that, God forbid, if there's an emergency and you call up your pediatrician, like in the last 2 months, the situation was so bad, there was no doctor available. However, when you do get an availability for 2 minutes, make sure you have your child's medical history, the height and weight of the child, and the vaccination history of the child ready. Because your doctor will ask you about the height and weight of the child, and based on that, will calculate medications to give your child. So, for the flu vaccination, yes, I would suggest go ahead with it after a word with your pediatrician. And secondly, follow these simple guidelines to inform your pediatrician.
Also, Dr. Chandra, you know, everybody seems to be focusing on either the under 12-year child or the above 18. But those children between the ages of 12 to 18 seem to be like nobody's responsibility suddenly. So my question, what are the protocols for them? Do you treat them like children and follow flu shots and all of that? Or do they follow the adult guideline for it?
This is a rather complicated situation, because that age group, anything below 12 is pediatric. Anything above 12 is basically adult. All right. Again, a lot depends on the height and weight. You will have 13-year-olds these days who are about 5 feet in height and who have a good body weight. They can easily be taken care of at adults. So based on your height and weight, if your kid is rather small or is underweight, make sure you have a word with your pediatrician in that age group. But however, if it is 13 or 14 and above, they usually treat it as adults. And it's all adult doctors like me who are GPs will be happily able to take care of them.
Right. Also, they say the third wave is going to be really, really big for children. Do you think that, has the second wave, is there any way for the pediatricians to treat COVID in children the way all of you guys have treated? You've seen far more number of cases, far more number of patients than what the pediatricians have seen at this point in time.
Yeah. Well, the one thing that I'd like to mention here is that, again, I'm being rather cautiously optimistic here, but you know, there is no scientific evidence which is pointing towards the fact that kids will absolutely be affected in the third wave. The reasons why we are assuming that kids will be affected a bit is because, number one, there is no vaccination for the kids as of now. That's number one. And secondly, kids obviously have a more vulnerable immune system. Their immune systems are not yet developed. So they are the group that may be targeted. All right. The reason why a third wave will arrive is because, number one, there will be a mutation in the virus that we are not aware of. And number two, if the lockdown restrictions are eased and people go out and start celebrating in such a way that the virus spreads like this, and that's exactly what is happening, unfortunately, outside these days, that's why a third wave will increase. However, I have to emphasize on the same fact which I mentioned right at the beginning, that no variety of the virus, whether it's the Delta or the Gamma, are specifically targeting kids. And there are no further mutations which we are seeing as of now that are affecting kids specifically. However, it is good to be prepared. It's absolutely good to be prepared. So make sure that you find out who your nearest pediatrician is. Make sure you take your child's medical history and be ready. Watch out for your nearest hospital, which has a PICU, which has an oxygen supply. It's just good to be prepared. That's all. And, you know, it's the treatment should follow guidelines, the guidelines which we have seen. However, I would also like to emphasize on the fact that it's best not to overdo the treatment. There are certain cases which we've seen in the past, treated multiple patients who healed well and are alive and well and have been back from the critical conditions. However, there were some mistakes made by doctors who started medications like steroids right at the beginning of a disease, and that too in children as well. It is very, very crucial not to abuse certain medications and not to overuse certain medications. So I would just want my fellow doctors and my, you know, I'm sure they all know, however, but to focus on the fact that it's overuse of medications are never good.
And Dr. Chandra, last bit of the leg, the psychological impact that you've seen in patients, both children, parents, adults, the senior citizens, that is something you're concerned about.
Yes. Well, mental health is as important as physical health. I'm sure all of us have suffered over the past couple of months, in the past 2 months, and even in the first wave. It's not easy staying at home constantly 24/7. It's not easy losing family members. It's not easy seeing everyone around you depressed. And that's probably the reason why there are so many cases of clinical depression and anxiety that have popped up. And yes, it is a reality. Unfortunately, a lot of people are getting affected by it. And my suggestion here is to not be ashamed and seek help right away. It is absolutely imperative that you focus on your mental health as well, because this virus is here to stay for a while. We have to be a little careful over the next couple of months, at least for another year or so, until there is a better way of vaccinating more people. But seek out help. If you want, speak to a counselor. Everybody is around online to make sure that, you know, they can help you out. Seek counseling, seek support, speak, particularly for parents, speak to your children, find out what exactly it is that is worrying them. It's not easy to see them lose out family members, particularly a mother or a father. They would be devastated. So they usually have clinical anxiety and clinical depression, and it is very, very crucial that they reach out. You reach out to them. Reach out to counselors, speak to them. There are multiple ways of getting across through. For example, pets. I've seen many, many children adopt pets and get in a new pet at home. I've seen their lives change, you know, divert the attention somewhere else. And I know this is difficult, but for a few months now, we have to stick to the online, you know, the situation where we're having classes online, schools online. But things will soon get better. I mean, we're just about there with vaccinations, just a couple of months more. We fought for this long. We might as well fight for a few months more and just get it over with.
Right. And of course, the last question which I must ask you, how are you keeping sane? And how did you keep sane over the last 2 months when shit hit the roof?
Well, it was difficult. I mean, I had to stay alive, and, you know, I've taken an oath, so I had to honor the oath as much as possible, but it was not easy in any way at all. we've all had, like most of the doctors, I think almost all my colleagues and myself, we've all had certain signs of PTSD. You know, it is not easy to lose your patients. It's not easy to constantly receive phone calls 24/7. And you can hear on the other side somebody gasping, somebody begging for oxygen. And it's the feeling of helplessness which gets to you, because there were so many lives that we could have saved. Unfortunately, just because of lack of oxygen and lack of beds, we couldn't help. You know, so there is a feeling of helplessness which took over for those 2 months. Thankfully, the situation is much better. I mean, we've learned our lessons. I know we all know how to prepare, or at least be mentally prepared for the next wave. So hopefully, yes, things will be better.
Right. This is incredible. Thank you so much, Dr. Chandra. And just last, I think somebody's asked a question on, should we test our kids for antibodies? So if you want to answer that bit.
All right. Tentatively, my suggestion is not to test for antibodies. Wait and watch. You need to remember that multiple patients have negative antibodies. For example, the IgG antibodies for COVID. You may be negative for that. However, there are other antibodies which are there in your system that may not be detected in your blood. And they are called B cell immunity and T cell immunity. They're memory immunities. So although you may have a blood test done and you notice IgG antibodies, and you may not notice antibodies, that may kind of, you know, that may you know, depress you to an extent that you've suffered, you've taken a vaccine and there are no antibodies. So no, not as of now. Wait and watch. If you've just recovered from COVID, wait for about a month or so and just do an IgG antibody test, a spike protein test. Or if you've just received the vaccination, my suggestion is take both shots and then do an antibody test after about a month and a half or so. And please don't get discouraged if you do not have antibodies IgG. That's not the only antibody out there. There are multiple other antibodies that will not be available in your blood. So don't worry about that.
And don't get too excited. Stop masking up if you do a whole bunch of antibodies as well.
Absolutely. I absolutely agree with this fact that, you know, we are opening up. I have noticed, I live in Delhi and I've noticed Delhi opening up. And I think the crowds which I saw yesterday out in the streets, it was like a mini fair going on everywhere. And, you know, with the occasional mask down and people having their pani puri and having fun. And that's the spirit of Delhi. However, it's fine to be in the spirit as long as you have your masks on and maintain a bit of social distancing. And like I said, a lot of people are out there who randomly, I just ask, you know, that, you know, why are you not wearing a mask? So their answer is, we just recovered from COVID and I'm like a walking cauldron of antibodies. So I say that exactly wouldn't help you out, because you can still pass on the virus to someone else, someone close to you, because you will carry it in your nose and your mouth. So irrespective of whether you've healed or not healed, please make sure you're wearing a mask and you're maintaining your social distancing.
Which I must mention to you a small anecdote that my daughter told me. She said, Mama, the first wave we wore the one mask, the second wave we wear the second mask, in the third wave do I have to wear three masks? So I must ask you this, just double masking. I was heartbroken, I must say this, because the poor child is assimilating it in so many different ways, right? But I must ask you, the double mask, is it important? And your rules on masking?
Everybody has his or her rules. I think everybody's done enough research on masking and for them to be happy with the kind of mask they're wearing. I do not want to impose anything on anybody. The only few things that I mention is that I would request patients to avoid masks with valves. Just avoid them. They are absolutely useless. Those are to be avoided. And if you're wearing two masks, just make sure whatever, even if you're wearing one mask or two masks, just make sure the dangerous area of your face is covered. As long as your mask covers the nose and covers the mouth and it's not hanging below your chin, you're safe. You know, so wear one, wear two, but make sure this area is well covered, and that should protect you well enough. Also, it's very crucial to take care of your masks as well. You know, we come back home and we just randomly throw the mask in a corner, wear it again. Try taking care of the mask. You need to sanitize your mask as well as much as possible. And, you know, don't repeat a mask multiple times. Wash it and then use it. So basic things for masking. The only thing which I say is don't wear a mask with a valve. It doesn't help.
Right. Okay. Dr. Chandra, thank you so much. I'm not going to keep you any longer, but thank you so much for chatting with us. And
thank you for having me, Vansi. Thank you. Take care and stay safe.